Good morning, everyone. Really great to see you all. I've been paging through all of your lovely faces. Welcome to Westminster. I am Ellen Quadgrass, for those who are new. I'm the minister here at Westminster, and I'm very happy to be here with you. I want to take a moment just to thank Al Jeffries, our worship partner, and also George Johnson. George has leapt into the role of tech host. This is his first time doing this for a regular, second time. Okay. And I just want us all to send him loving, supportive thoughts as he manages the panel in front of him. Thank you, George. And thank you, Al. So our theme this month, for September is renewal. It has been a difficult week in the world. There's a lot that's been happening. Some of it troubling. We've lost this past week Ruth Bader Ginsburg, a hero of women's rights and human rights in the highest court of this country. And it is a loss that is leaving many anxious about what's next. The fires continue on the West Coast. There are ongoing struggles right here with the pandemic and all its implications. And this week, there was a proclamation by the president arguing that teaching about race is somehow unpatriotic, that talking about the tragedies of the past is somehow not healthy. It was a troubling and divisive statement that is part of a larger pattern of denial and escape from accountability. In thinking about today's service, I am seeing how the overarching narrative of any country is bound up in the stories of the thousands and millions of individuals that make up that country, and the struggle at a national level to reconcile or not with respect to our racial tragedy or anything else is all bound up with our capacity as individuals to do exactly that kind of reconciliation in our own hearts, to understand what happened in the past, to face our mistakes, to take responsibility, and to do what we can to set things right. So today, inspired by the Jewish holidays of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, which we are right in the middle of right now, let us explore our own capacity to face what's hard, to offer forgiveness, make amends, and begin to turn it all around. As Scott Taylor writes, we begin once more the work of welcome, of forgiveness, of renewing this weary, worn world. Because a new day, a new story awaits. Come, let us worship together. Our first reading is from a UU liturgy for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. In Judaism, the spirit of this time is woven around two books. The Torah, which is the first five books of the Bible, and the legendary Book of Life. According to the legend, on Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year, the angel of life writes each of our destinies for the year to come. Then, during the 10 days following the days of Av, the Book of Life is kept open. Al, you're muted.
These 10 days are a deeper opportunity, a second chance to turn back towards God, to turn back toward a deeper truth and greater integrity, to a wider love. Through reflection and action, changes made in this time can alter the course of life and destiny, and the angel of life may reconsider what was previously inscribed. At the last sound of the shofar on the day of Yom Kippur, says the legend, the book of life for the year to come is sealed. All is written.
On the days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, the spirit of this time calls us to look at ourselves from a place different than the usual vantage point, to see ourselves without the trappings which might clutter our days and ways, to see ourselves as we truly are, with nothing but what we would take to the grave. It is awesome to look clearly at the real moment. Thus, the days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are called the days of awe.
Reconsideration of commitments and reflection on our lives are part of the days of awe. But there is more. This time is a practical and honest reminder of our fallible humanity. It is a time to look at the mistakes we have made and to make amends. In our recognition of our own limitations is the source of our compassion for our neighbors. In our own humility before our humanness lives the source of our connection with all people. That connection is our strength.
Our second reading is called Finally on My Way to Yes by Pesha Joyce Gertler. Finally, on my way to yes, I bump into all the places where I said no to my life. All the untended wounds, these coded messages that send me down the wrong street again and again. Where I find them, these old wounds, the old misdirections, and I lift them close to my heart and I say, holy, holy. Let us sing together, there is more love somewhere.
There is more love somewhere. There is more love somewhere. I'm gonna keep on till I find it. There is more love somewhere.
I was on the phone with a friend not too long ago. "Your voice is breaking up," she said to me, sounding just this side of irritated, which I was too, because I had noticed her voice was breaking up, and this wasn't the first time this had happened. "Are you doing something different?" she asked, now more explicitly laying the problem at my feet. At that point, I almost asked her whether she had fixed the problem with her phone. She had mentioned a problem once, but I didn't go there because I love this friend. That conversational tack didn't look terribly productive, and by that point, the connection, had magically resolved itself. Whatever and wherever the problem actually was, I couldn't help but notice we were both pretty sure it was at the end of the line that was not our own. I have a theory that something in us, almost on autopilot, externalizes problems, lays the blame for things we don't like on whatever or whoever is nearby. Unless it's patently obvious that it's me, the problem probably lies with you. There are so many ways this manifests. You get the wrong entree at a restaurant. How many of us assume we didn't give the order clearly enough? Your friend is an hour late because she couldn't find the meeting spot. How many of us assume the fault lies with how we gave directions? A team project doesn't succeed. Somehow, our coworkers' mistakes tend to stand out in full color, and our own mistakes, well, our own mistakes? Did we? Did I? I didn't make a mistake. I used to frequently buy belated birthday cards because I was never very good at sending them on time. A favorite of mine said, "Sorry, this card is late, but why do you always forget to remind me?" There's something so satisfying about holding other people responsible. Right now, we happen to be, as we've been hearing, right in the middle of one of the holiest times in the Jewish calendar, a time that you could say is all about humanity's relationship to responsibility. The Jewish New Year just ended, and we are now in that time leading up to and including Yom Kippur, also known as the Day of Atonement, the day of taking responsibility for one's own mistakes. It's interesting to me that traditionally, way, way back when, Yom Kippur included a dramatic ritual involving two goats. The first goat would be sacrificed to God, kind of like a tit for tat. Here's where I messed up, so God, I'll give you something in return. It's a little archaic logic that fits with the archaic way some part of our brain works. The second goat would be sent away. Metaphorically, all of humanity's sins would be loaded onto this goat's back before it was cast off far, far away into the desert, never to be heard from again. This ritual was born out of a need, one rabbi surmises, for humans to literally watch our shame and guilt leave us, disappear, be gone forevermore, so we can finally let it go. Azazel was the word used for this goat, which when first translated into English in the 16th century, was translated as a scapegoat. The goat literally, which escapes off to the desert, hopefully with the sins of humanity. Over time, this term, escape goat, actually became the origin of a word with which we are familiar, scapegoat. Scapegoat, the dynamic where we target another person and imagine somehow that this will free us. It's when we blame someone else in hopes of resolving a feeling in our own hearts. It does not always, of course, work all that well, no matter how often it's tried, and it is tried often. Anyone who ever went to elementary school knows what scapegoating looks like and how well that works. Or anyone who ever went to middle school or high school, or frankly, anyone who's ever watched the news, especially lately. We don't have to look very far to see this ingrained habit of blaming other people. Why does it happen so much? There's temporary relief, maybe, but some part of the issue stays in us. We are not actually free. Maybe that's why the ancient rabbis didn't leave it just at the two goats, but wisely paired that ritual with other elements that go much deeper, that get at the roots of the guilt and shame. They added devotional elements that invite people to look at their part, search their own hearts, and leave aside, for a time, the temptation to make accusations against the hearts of others. So here we are in this time called the Days of Awe, this 10-day period when, as we heard in the reading, the legendary book of life is open. When individuals have an opportunity, the tradition goes, to change the course of destiny by changing the shape of their heart, by making amends, by practicing forgiveness, by reflecting in the light of our own mortality, what really happened, and then own up and fess up. Because when you look at things from that light, from the recognition that we will not always be here on this earth, it tends to put the nature of our conflicts into perspective. A quote I heard once goes something like this: "You'll be dead a long, long time. You're alive now. What do you want to set right while you still can?" Jews all over the world are called into this self-searching practice, none of which is particularly easy, simple, or fun. But it's all part of being created anew, part of renewal for the new year. Now, we are not a Jewish congregation, but we can learn from this ritual. And we do well when we practice something akin to it for our newly minted congregational year and for our September theme of renewal. This kind of deep reflection and action has the potential to change the course of a life, which is why I preach on it every year. As you use, we may not have a built-in ritual time of cleansing, atonement, or repair, but it's so important. I remember the first year I was here, I preached on this topic, and at least one person came up to me in the days afterward to tell me about the amends they had made and how it turned an important relationship around. That person looked relieved and lightened and hopeful, and I thought to myself, isn't this a big reason why we come to church at all? To transform our relationships, to heal the past, to find our way to starting anew, even if it is difficult or humbling or hard. Luckily, we are not starting completely from scratch, as you use. We may not have an official day for atonement and renewal, but we do have tools in our toolbox already. The concept is not unfamiliar. What we have is covenant, a commitment to come back together when something between us feels like it's come apart. Some of our covenants are explicit, like the seven principles, or the covenants we create for our team meetings or small group ministry, like connection groups. Other covenants are implicit, which doesn't make them any less important, but can make them tougher to pick up if you're new to us, as Reverend Peter Friedrich notes in a sermon on Yom Kippur. One of those implicit covenants includes the promise to assume good intentions, he continues. Even when someone says or does something that hurts us, we have faith that it wasn't meant to be mean or malicious, which doesn't mean it feels any less hurtful, but it does remove ill will from the interaction. Another implied promise is that we help each other when and where we can. Another one, when the call goes out and volunteers are needed, we honestly assess our ability and our availability and step up if we're able. The same goes for offering financial support to the extent we are able. But there is another implicit promise that is particularly relevant for this holiday, which is the promise to be, as Friedrichs puts it, a community where reconciliation is possible, even expected. Here we commit, he writes, both to doing the hard work of reconciliation and to offering the grace of forgiveness to each other. When we talk about it, we can use shorthand phrases like, we stay at the table, or we don't take our ball and go home. There is an implied promise that both parties will do what they can to reconcile. Like that song we sang in the opening hymn, when we've sung this together, we sometimes include the descant, which includes the words, though you've broken your vows 1,000 times. Nevertheless, we get to start again. Try anew. It's all part of creating a new kind of community, a rare and precious place where we relate to each other with grace and patience, as well as high expectations, where we take responsibility for our actions and mistakes and challenge ourselves and each other to a life that reflects our high values, our values of being anti-racist, our values of teamwork, our values of assuming best intentions and speaking honestly and directly when something isn't working. That staying at the table, assuming best intentions, apologizing and trying again are not easy. And that is in part, I think, because often challenges we encounter in our day-to-day lives, including here, resonate with deeper challenges, older challenges, painful times in our lives from growing up or elsewhere that have led to blind spots or painful spots or places that just dog us one way or another. Trigger points, you might call them. In his book, The Wise Heart, meditation teacher Jack Kornfield writes of his journey to forgive his father. This man had been abusive to his mother, his siblings, and to Jack himself. He describes memories of his father's anger, the terror he himself experienced as a child, and his feelings of impotence growing up. He doesn't say exactly how this experience impacted him, but he does say it was only after years of therapy and forgiveness practice that he was finally able to understand something about his own anger, depression, cynicism, and humor, and about those same characteristics in his brothers. It was only after years of practice, getting inside his father's own painful story, allowing himself to feel, to weep, to rage about this man who had had such a profound and difficult impact on his life. It was only after many years of facing these painful memories that he was finally able to begin to see his father in a new light, in his full humanity. And one might imagine, finally able to see himself in a new light too. Jack Kornfield's experience is unique, but so many of us have something from our past that we know is still with us, that still hurts somewhere. Something someone else did, something we did, something that still gets us, that keeps us from the full joy of living, from being our best selves, or maybe a little bit of both. In the words of the poet we heard earlier, we bump into places in our lives, untended wounds that send us down the wrong street, creating problems with people now, limiting our ability to be who we want to be. What if we could hold those untended wounds to our chest? What if we could one day say, holy, holy? That's part of what this time is about, I think. Reminding us that transformation is possible. And it is a practice. It doesn't happen overnight, but it can happen. So I invite us now to practice. You may already have in your mind's eye something from your life that has come to the surface, something you've done, something someone has done to you, something hard in a relationship with someone you love. I offer you a meditation practice from Kornfield's book. You can try it with me now, or we'll also post it with the sermon on the website so you can practice later if you want. And if you are not a meditator, don't worry. You don't have to do this. You don't have to fake it. You can simply relax and just listen to the words. If you would like to try the meditation, I invite you to begin by finding a comfortable position and allow your eyes to close if you like. Let your body and mind relax as you are able. Breathing gently into the area of your heart. Let yourself feel the barriers you've erected and the emotions that you have carried because of ways you haven't forgiven yourself or haven't forgiven others. Let yourself feel gently the pain of ways you have kept your heart closed. And then, breathing softly, begin asking and extending forgiveness. You can recite the words I'll say in a moment, or just let images and feelings come up and grow deeper. For example, if you are in your mind asking forgiveness of others, you might say, "There are many ways I have hurt and harmed others, caused them suffering. Knowingly or unknowingly, out of my own pain, fear, and confusion. Gently see the pain you've caused. As you are able, feel your regret. Sense the possibility that you can finally release the burden and ask for forgiveness. Picture each memory that still weighs on your heart. And then to each person in your mind, you can say, I ask for your forgiveness. I ask for your forgiveness. Just give that a moment, give you a moment to sit with those words and images, and then we'll bring us all back. All right, come on back into this present moment. Open your eyes if you had closed them. Notice that we are here together and settle yourself in this moment again. That was a practice to request forgiveness, but oftentimes we need to forgive ourselves as much as we need to be forgiven by others. Oftentimes we carry our own burden of guilt along with our regrets. And there is a similar practice you can do to forgive yourself. And there are still others you can use to practice in your mind's eye forgiving those who have hurt you. They're all practices designed to untangle the roots of difficulties, the roots of pains we don't even always recognize we still carry. But these practices can free us. As we work with our minds and hearts, it will become more clear where we do maybe actually need to apologize to someone. where we really do need to change our ways, where we need to forgive or set a boundary or have a conversation, and where, even if we've broken our vows 1,000 times, we get to try again and yet again. So here we are in the middle of these Jewish days of awe, in the middle of challenging times in our world. May we take inspiration from this holiday. May we find motivation. May we do less scapegoating and more heart opening. May we stay at the table, forgive each other, forgive ourselves, take action, and find that perhaps the destiny in our individual or collective book of life may just take a turn for the better. May it be so. Amen.